This episode of Weed Like a Word was recorded via social media during lockdown conditions in the 2020 coronavirus epidemic. Consequently, the sound quality is a bit ropey at times, and so indeed is the quality of the presenters. But nevertheless, enjoy the show.
Oh, and there's some naughty swearing too.
We'd like a word.
About editing. With me, Paul Waters.
And me, Stephen Colgan.
And our guests this time are Russell McLean, who's a structural editor, writer of various books, including Ed's Dead.
And Linda Nagel, who has also written lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff, and is also an editor, structural and copy editor.
What do editors do? Russell has just choked here. I think he took it as an insult, as in, do they do anything?
Moan and swear and rant and use red pen. We get a manuscript and then we pull it to pieces to make it better, of course.
Yeah, it's a funny joke because I blagged into it. I didn't intend to become an editor. So, I mean, to me, it is always just about making sure that the writer is as clear as they possibly can be in what they want to do. That's really the main thing. And that if I'm reading it as somebody who doesn't know what the writer intends to do, then I can understand it. I always say, I will ask the stupid questions before a reader does. That's my main thing.
Yeah, I'll second that. There's points that you come across where you think, what are you trying to communicate? It's not clear. Can you clarify?
Yeah.
It's all about communicating the story effectively. And if you don't do it, your readers aren't going to get it.
And I think that's it. Do you find this, Linda, that lots of people don't really think about structure and stuff when they're writing? It's quite interesting to suddenly start discussing it with people and you realise they've not looked into the structure of story before. It's often quite natural to them.
Yes, and only because that's how I roll as a writer, because I'm a complete pantser. So I can identify that quite easily because I don't plot. I don't know what plot is, unless I'm editing. It's different. I'm a better editor than I am when it comes to plotting as a writer, because I just don't do it.
Now that raises an interesting point, because one of the questions I got asked by someone is that, well, if editors are so bloody good at sorting out other people's story, how come they're not all best-selling writers? But as I was trying to point out, there's a difference in disciplines between being a writer and being someone who edits other people's writing. In just the same way as there's a difference between being a professional driver or being a driving instructor. You know, I wouldn't expect the average driving instructor to be Formula One driver.
I'm a different person as an editor than a writer. Yeah, the pants thing, that's what it comes down to, because I don't want to write the sort of stuff that sells, because I do stream of consciousness bullshit and all that pretentious malarkey, and there's no market for that, so I just write what I want to write. But the stuff that sells, that's where your editing head comes in, because you know how you can help other people to get there.
Are you kinder as an editor to other people than you are to yourself as a writer?
Yes and no. It depends what kind of relationship you've built up with the author. If it's someone you've got, like Duncan Bradshaw, who is a bizarro author and he's just wonderful and he's got intestines and tentacles all over the place. And I've done him quite a few times now. And we've got this kind of relationship going. So I can just comment on his with, what the fuck did you just write? But you've got other people who you might need to mollycoddle a little more. So it really depends on the author, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I had this terrible author recently that wrote this book called Blackwater Town. Just a pain in the arse to edit.
It was awful. Awful.
I wasn't going to bring it up. Lies. But I'm glad you did.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. Each person you work with is different. And for me, they're kind of fun of it because I work across a number of different publishers, so there's lots of different ways to do it. And also do reports on unpublished manuscripts for a company called Jericho Writers. It used to be called the Writers Workshop, run by a fellow called Harry Bingham and stuff. And every approach and every author is different. And you have to kind of guess. I mean, for me, the fun of it is kind of guessing how you can deal with somebody. So, for example, I had that call with you, Paul, when we first sort of started working together and stuff. And from that, I have to work out, right, how do I approach this guy in the way that's going to make it work for him and still allow me to, you know, sort of look at stuff and say what needs to be said as well. You know, you can't, I don't believe in, I mean, I know what you're saying, Linda, about some of them you have to mollycoddle a little bit, and that's certainly true, but I also think you have to be a little bit tough at times as well. Yeah. You know, you have to be quite tough with people and really say, because the thing is, once somebody's published, we're in the safe space as editors. We're the safe space where anything can and should be said. Whereas when you get into the world, it's not safe. My first book, I was a bookseller when it was published, and it was on the shelves in Dundee in the shop I was in. And my boss was saying to this woman, this old woman comes in, is looking for crime books, and she goes, oh, there's this author, Dundee author, Russell McLean, new book out, certainly worth a try. Won't you go? And I, of course, I'm behind the bookshelf stocking up at this point. I go, I'll just listen to how this conversation goes. And she says, oh no, I've read that book. It was so awful I had to burn it.
And
she was offended by the swearing, apparently. But that's the kind of thing. Readers are not going to hold back when it comes to their opinion of your book. So when it comes to the editing, you kind of have to create that safe where you're going to have to go, you know, that this could be a reaction, or have you thought about that, or, you know, but you do it in a fun and respectful manner, unless you're working with Paul. So,
and most new clients of mine will, when they send the manuscript over, they will say, go on, have at it, be ruthless, be as brutal as you like, because they know that's kind of the way it
works. Do they ever really mean that?
Yes, all they right. do. Yeah, I've never had any negative feedback about my negative feedback. So, yeah. It's always constructive.
I was going to ask Linda, are you working with authors who are currently, who have a deal already, who are getting published at that point?
Yeah, it's probably half and half.
Yeah.
Get a lot of new interest. Just word of mouth, really, because I'm only part-time.
Yeah.
Being a mum and all, but I get a lot of people what have got the deals already. Yes.
Yeah, because I think that's it's some of the stuff you get through with the people who are maybe looking to see if you'll say something nice about the matter or whatever. You know, like the Jericho Writers model. It's really interesting to see some of the differences between the people who already published or who have the deal are often quite open stuff, and a lot of people who come through Jericho are looking for advice and stuff, but then you do get the odd one who doesn't want to listen, who wants to be told they're great, which is I always find fascinating. And I think that the trick with being a writer is a really weird one. You have to be both confident to go for it, but also humble enough to know that you may not be perfect.
Yeah.
And if you think you're perfect, then usually there is a problem. The more you know. But
there's a lot of precious babies out there that people have created, and they don't like. I mean, if you're in the system, then your agent will be pushing your stuff out. On the last show we had, or one of the previous shows, we had Stephanie Scott. And she wrote a book that sort of went across lots of different genres. And all the publishers are saying, well, if you make it like this, we'll take it. Or if you make it like that, we'll take it. Mm-hmm. And it was the agent's job to say, no, sod you, you're having this as it is because it's a great book. And eventually one did. Then the editor came in. But of course, the editor's job wasn't to change the genres or say, your book should be like this. It was just that it was to take the book as is and make it as good as possible.
Absolutely.
And that's another big difference, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing as well. But it's not even that. That's what you want to do, even with everybody. You want to take the book that's in somebody's head and bring it into the world. Because the issue is sometimes, I think, that what we think we've written and what comes across to other people. Because a book's a strange kind of conversation, I think, between author and page at the start. And then it becomes between page and reader. And you can't tell what the author's intent was when you're the reader unless it's very clear on the page. And I think that's kind of a thing that's very difficult to balance. This is all sounding very intellectual. I'm disappointed in myself.
Yeah, well, it's a smart show. It's a smart show, this is, you know. We like this level of chat because the kind of people who listen to this show they want to hear what goes on in the background of the industry, because a lot of the time it's just someone sitting at home on the dining room table with a laptop and they've got no clue as to what goes on. Yeah. So when they hear you're going to have a structural edit, they don't know what that means. And we will come to that question in a minute.
Yeah. One of the things that is interesting about what you're saying, Russell, is what people mean and explaining it. Mm-hmm. So people have been asking me questions that they weren't entirely sure of in the book. But, you know, was it this or was it that? And I don't really want to tell them, because I want them to just be happy thinking it's whatever they wanted it to be.
Yeah, yeah.
That, if that works for them. And I'm scared that if I tell them maybe what I actually meant, that'll disappoint them. So like the conversations you're talking about are safe to have with your editor. But maybe you just like never talk to a reader ever again.
I think let the readers have fun with it. There's a great story. It might be apocryphal, it might not be, but it's about Philip K. Dick, the science fiction author. And it's the book that's become the Amazon TV series, The Man in the High Castle. He wrote that years ago. Obviously, it's 1966 something, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so he writes it. It becomes this Hugo Award winner, the whole thing. And somebody says to him, there's one of the characters is wearing a fish brooch. And this person says, is the fish brooch representative of, I think it's something to do with Christianity or some, you know, something like that. And he goes, no, I just gave her the brooch because I thought it looked nice. But they were reading this whole thing into it that he hadn't initially intended. And given that Philip K. Dick had a lot of meanings in his books, you know, that somebody was finding stuff he hadn't intended, was quite interesting. I think that it's a whole thing. My background is philosophy. I did it at university rather than English or anything, because of course, and hermeneutics, which is essentially the philosophy of meaning or philosophy of communication. And there was a lot of this kind of stuff in it about the difference between critic and artist and all the rest of it as well. And the thing that came out of it is you might as well write what you enjoy writing and let other people make of it what they will. You know, even if you have an intent, it will eventually become absolutely screwed.
Can I just mention self-publishing? Because I'm an advocate of it. I think it's really, really useful for people who do write a little differently and are finding trouble getting picked up by a traditional publisher. And because there's a lot of individuality out there, and I'm not sure about the confidence that people have to get writing what they really want to write. So I'm looking at self-publishing something myself as well. Just so I can say, well, yeah, I've come from this position now as well. But I also edit for Haverhill House, or Haverhill House, as they pronounce it. We just got a Shirley Jackson Award, so that's pretty good. So we must be doing something right for a little anthology.
So, like Steve sometimes says, I don't know if it's Steve's original thought, but he said it to me, that sometimes people will point out to you where you've gone wrong in a book or in a story. And if somebody says to you, that doesn't work or it's wrong, they're probably right. But whatever solution they come up with is probably wrong. So you should listen to them highlighting the problem, but then think of your own solution. But do you guys come up with solutions or not?
Some of it where the syntax is all over the place and you might just need to reword it a bit. And I might do that for the first, maybe the third of the novel. But then I'll start pulling back a bit and say, how about you think about rewording this to convey XYZ, which is what you're going for. But another thing I like to stress is, here's why it doesn't work, and I will explain why. Here's how you can make it better, but also take all the advice you can and then throw away what you don't want. Do it anyway. If you want participles dangling because you like the way it sounds, go for it.
I think that's it, because that's very much more, because you're a copy editor, obviously, as well as the structural stuff. And to me, I wouldn't go in for the language first. Although the language is massively important to me and I get very picky about stuff and clarity of that, for me it's always look at the structure first of all. And I think the making suggestions thing though is interesting. And again, as obviously Paul knows this from the other side of dealing with me, I have no idea how it goes, but my intent of doing things is often to make suggestions as to, well, if you did this, then this would be the result, and you can think about this and that and the next thing. And, you know, and often what I find is about saying, well, you've got this event, but why don't you move it back to here or up front to here so that you're foreshadowing here? And then that's going to make more sense. Because I think a lot of it's about, and particularly because I deal mostly with crime and science fiction and a wee bit of horror, it's about the tension. And tension for me, and building tension is a massive, I really subscribe to Alfred Hitchcock's whole thing where you've got a couple having a chat on a bench. A bomb blows up, that's a surprise. you've got the same couple having a chat on a bench. We keep cutting to the bomb under the bench. That's tension because we know it's going to go off even though they're having that ordinary conversation. And I think it's about thinking about structure like that. And a lot of people, I think surprise is the way to go. What's the thing we all remember about The Sixth Sense? The Sixth Sense has a surprise at the end. I won't tell you what it is in case you're one of three people who haven't seen it. But once you know the surprise, where does the tension then come from? You know, and people want to have the surprise, but it's actually more fun, I think, if you have tension. If you have that whole, oh, we know this is probably going to happen. How are they going to get out of this? Or you're screaming at the page, don't bloody go there because this is there.
Yeah. Do you know what that reminds me of? It's the moment when an actor, a performer, is holding back the tears.
Yeah.
Once they cry, it's gone.
Absolutely.
But when they're holding it back and biting their lip, and that's what you're after in a book, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You want your book to not cry tears.
Yeah.
Because then that'd ruin the pages.
Russell made a suggestion to me towards the end of the book. So it was a solution. And I was kind of surprised but pleased to be offered it. And so I haven't quite had enough people reacting yet to know how it's gone down. But I'm going to claim complete credit if everyone likes it. But if they don't like it, I'll blame the editor.
That's the way to
I thought, oh, that's a good idea. Why didn't I think of that? Okay, well, I'm going to do that.
You're too close to something you've created. You sometimes can't see the blindingly obvious in front of you. I mean, that's the same in all walks of life, you know, and it's no different from writing. Mm. Now, I quite like the tension thing, because it reminded me of, we had Denise Minor on some time back, and she said that she thinks that the more fun books to read are books that are about abductions, because the tension is constant. When it's a murder, bang, they're dead, that's it. Mm-hmm. But when you've got something like Adrian McKinty's The Chain, where you don't know where it's going to go, it just keeps you hooked in. I mean,
he's just won the Crime Novel of the Year, the Thigston's Old Peculiar Prize. Mm-hmm. That's the end of part one of this episode of We'd Like a Word with Russell McLean and Linda Nagle. Coming up in part two, we'll be looking at the different kinds of editing that exist and why they're all annoying in their own way. See you in part two.